On today's episode of the Snakes on the Diamond podcast, we're going to react to the Dylan Cease trade, talk about the backup shortstop position, the number update you on the number five starter role, and finish with a preview of the spring breakout game between Diamondbacks and Rockies, which will be Saturday at 4 o'clock Arizona time. So, joining me today on the podcast is Jack Summers. Wes Beyer will be here once he gets his technical difficulties figured out. But anyways, Jack, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Michael. How's it going? Thanks for having me on again.
Yeah, it's been a very interesting week, I would say. Don't want to elaborate too much on it. Before we get into today's topics, we want to make sure you hit that subscribe button, leave a like, and comment down below what you think of the Dylan Cease trade, if the Padres have closed the gap on the Diamondbacks with that move. All right, so the Dylan Cease trade. So the Padres traded for arguably the hottest pitcher in the trade market, starting pitcher in the trade market, Dylan Cease, going to the San Diego Padres in exchange for reliever Steven Wilson, along with prospects Drew Thorpe, Jairo Iriarte, and Samuel Zavala. So anyways, Jack, what do you think that was the right price for the Padres to pay for a guy with Dylan Cease's reputation, or do you think it's a case where Chicago got a very good package out of that and they're pretty happy with what they got?
Well, it could be both, right? I don't think the package is bad. Cease has one more year. He's a very good pitcher. He's not quite the Cy Young candidate he was a couple years ago, but he's solid, and he can give you 175 innings and maybe something around a 4 ERA, maybe a little better. I don't think he's a low 2 ERA guy. But he's at least a 3-WAR pitcher, probably. That's what the projections have for him. His stuff has degraded a little bit. His strikeout rates are down, and a lot of his other numbers are just not quite what they were. So, it's hard to say. I mean, is this a guy that's headed towards a decline, or has he just found a new level a little below where he was a couple years ago? And maybe he'll stick there. But, with a guy with his track record, previous 3 years, averaged about 4 WAR per year, it's kind of hard to say that the Padres didn't get a really good pitcher who's going to help them.
Yeah, and at the same time, the Padres didn't have to trade Ethan Salas, Jackson Merrill, Robbie Snelling, or Dylan Lesko to make that happen. So they didn't have to tap the very top of their farm system. So I think San Diego did pretty well in this trade, as well as the White Sox, because Drew Thorpe's a guy that could slot into the rotation in 25. Iriarte could probably make some starts for the at the end of 24, maybe even as early as 25. Zavala's probably more of a longer-term guy, but could be in their outfield mix in 26 when Luis Robert is hitting free agency. And the White Sox don't really have much going in the outfield, given the fact that they made a trade last month with the Diamondbacks for an outfielder. And then Wilson's a guy that improves their bullpen today. So, like I said, Chicago, I think, got better, but certainly got better long term, but certainly is going to take it on the chin in 2024 and 25 with their pitching.
So you don't think there's any chance that they fast track Thorpe to the majors this year?
I guess it is possible, since with Thorpe, it's not necessarily. I don't think he's going to get much more stuff at much more stuff or velocity added to his profile, but there's already a. He's already kind of has advanced feel, has a good feel for breaking, good slider, and pipeline gives him a 70 grade on the changeup, 60 grade on control. So, and they're projecting him as a solid number four starter.
I mean, a right hand 70 grade changeup is pretty unusual, isn't it?
Yep, I would say so.
It's on the one hand you often need to be a little bit careful with, changeup artists racking up big strikeout numbers in the lower minors, which is pretty much what he did last year. I mean, he have 138 strikeouts in 109 innings in high A. But then he, you know, had another 44 in 30 innings at Double-A. So, you know, I mean, that's a lot of strikeouts, 182 total in 139 innings. I'm guessing most of them came via that changeup. So sometimes guys like that don't necessarily carry that strong a strikeout profile once they get up against major league competition, you know, as opposed to having swing and miss stuff with your fastball or wicked slider or stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's only 22, right? And, I mean, he's been really, really good in the minor leagues. I mean, this is not a guy that's been just okay. He's been really good.
So. Yeah, and you look at, it's almost 6-1 strikeout to walk ratio too. So it's not, he's not like he's walking guys. From what Lance Brozdowski wrote, that it's like the fastball has good shape, but the velocity is kind of lacking, which is why it's a pitch that's played up due to his ability to spot it than the actual pitch quality itself. And then he has a above average slider along with that. It's kind of, I guess you'd say it's almost similar the profile that Bryce Jarvis kind of has. Bryce Jarvis with better strike throwing ability, I think, is what I would say he is.
What? How hard does he throw that changeup?
I don't think it says.
Freddie's getting between that and the fastball.
So the fastball is 91 to 95. So we're talking low 90s.
Right. Yeah, I don't know if this is a low to mid 80s changeup, or is it a hard changeup? You know, I'm not quite sure what that is.
Yeah, I'm looking for that particular tweet. Okay, it's 82 miles. It's about 82 miles an hour and had a 60% whiff rate. Yeah. And it fastball has pretty good vertical break, but the velocity obviously is an issue, especially if there's no deception in there in that delivery. Changeup has a lot of movement.
I'm peeking at his splits. So, I mean, they're pretty even, righty-lefty. And yeah. Strike ratio is about the same. So, I mean, you know, he must be using the slider more against right-handed batters. I'm wondering if he actually change up to righties.
Okay, so I think he's using two different sliders. He has a cutter around 80. Lance says that Brodowski says he has a cutter around 87 and a sweeper slider around 83, but it doesn't have a lot of sweep compared to most sweepers kind of thing. That's going to be interesting.
Well, I mean, I think he's a pretty solid prospect, you know, and like you said, Steven Wilson is somebody that can help them now. We talked a little bit offline, you know, obviously Zavala's really intriguing because of these super high OBPs he puts up with massive walk totals. He had 94 walks last year, 515 plate appearances as an 18-year-old in low A and high A. I mean, that's a lot.
I think the only other teenager with that many walks last year, I think, was Tamar Johnson, who went fourth overall to Pittsburgh in the 22 draft. But it's like nobody was questioning Tamar Johnson's hit tool at any point. So that's pretty interesting. Like I said,
yeah, I mean, he does have a lot of strikeouts in there, and you know, his batting averages aren't great. So I mean, but he's got some pop, he's got some power in there, you know. So he plays center field, and he's 18 years old. So it's going to be really interesting to watch him.
You know, yeah, he's definitely an up.
He's 6'1", 175, so you know, listed. So it's not like he's a pipsqueak. You know, he's going to fill out a little bit. He'll probably end up, you know, 10, 20 pounds heavier by the time he gets to major leagues. So could have a little bit more power in there. If you got a center fielder that hits for power and can play the position and takes that many walks, then you got a guy. I mean, he's a guy. Question is he going to be a low average guy, or is he going to figure out the hit tool part?
Yeah, I was going to say his strikeout rate was about a little higher than 25%, but like I said, at 18 years old, it's like the strikeouts could very well drop in his next year. So he's definitely an upside play for the White Sox. And I think that's probably how the Padres got around having to give up any of their top four prospects to make this deal happen.
Right.
Maybe you take a guy that in a year from now could be a top 100 guy. And that's kind of the thing that Mike Hazen has done with the Diamondbacks as well.
You know, I was talking with somebody else earlier today, and, you know, their comment was, well, you know, I think the White Sox just wanted to trade him to trade him. And I don't think that was the case. I think it was simply they wanted to get something out of him, and it took this long because they couldn't get as much as they wanted. I mean, they held out for a long time trying to get maybe a little bit stronger package than this, and they couldn't get it. And there's a lot of people out, a lot of teams out there that want pitching. I'm sure a lot of teams talk to the White Sox. You know, how good evaluators are they? And, you know, whether or not they're picking the best package, who knows, right? You know, that's tough to say. I mean, it's easy to say, well, they must not be very good evaluators because look at their track record the last, you know, dozen years or whatever. But at the same time, I mean, they're scouts and analysts working for there that have forgotten more than I know. So who am I to say that they made the wrong analysis? Time will tell.
Yeah. For example, for the Yankees, obviously the Yankees didn't want to trade Spencer Jones for Dylan Cease. So that's kind of a comparable trade. I think the Diamondbacks were one of the teams that talked to the White Sox about Cease, but then moved on pretty quickly in the offseason. I'm going to assume that was going to happen. That happened before they went after, I'm going to say between the time they went after Sonny Gray and Eduardo Rodriguez in the free agent market.
Right. By the way, I'm just about to take a sip on my favorite beer. I'm going to make a little ad. I'm not paid for this, but I love this stuff. Tower Station. And it's a Mother Road Brewery Tower Station IPA. Great stuff. All right. Well, you know, I think the big question, obviously, and you wrote about this for us earlier this week, is how does this impact the Diamondbacks? And I mean, it's not great for the Diamondbacks. It's hard to argue that the Padres didn't pick up at least two or three wins with this deal. And that brings them within range, you know, on paper with the Diamondbacks, I would think. I mean, obviously, whoever he's replacing, you got to deduct whatever that production was. But it's got to be adding at least two WAR to their projection at the end of the day. So, you know, if I just click on here real quick, you know, playoff odds. I'm on Fangraphs looking up their playoff odds, and they had the Padres. They have the Padres at 82.8 wins and the Diamondbacks at 83.8 and the Giants at 81.6 and the Dodgers at 94. Now, Fangraphs is the only website that has the Dodgers that low. If you go to places like Baseball Prospectus or Clay Davenport Projections, they all got the Dodgers around 100 wins. But almost everybody has Diamondbacks, Padres, and Giants all within a 2-3 win span of each other. I think Baseball Prospectus had the D-backs at 86. So, you know, you're looking at 83 to 84 wins between these two teams. It's pretty darn close. So it's going to help them. It definitely makes them more competitive, makes them a better team, brings them closer. Torrey Lovello had a great quote today, didn't he?
Yeah. All the best players want to come to the National League West.
Yeah. He said, I wish all the top players would quit coming to the National League West.
Yeah. The division suddenly become much harder.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, it's a good division. So, you know, that's the question that's on everybody's mind. Does that make the Padres more competitive? Yes, it does. I mean, on paper, it does. You never know with pitchers, how they're going to perform, if they're going to get hurt, you know, or something like that. I mean, there's always the possibility that Cease is on a downward spiral with his stuff and his ability. But like I said, my gut tells me that, you know, he's not at Cy Young level and he's down a tier from that. But I think he's kind of found his level at about a 3-1. Durable.
Kind of reminiscent of Ian Kennedy when he had that big year in 2011.
Yeah.
And then he kind of reverted back to a back end starter.
Right. Right. Well, I mean, again, Cease was more than a back end starter last year. I mean, you know, 3.7, I think, by Fangraphs. So, you know, it wasn't terrible.
Check Kennedy's 2012 season. Okay. Yeah, so, yeah.
Those war years from back then, because even then, you know, pitchers threw more innings. I think Kennedy had like 2011, 2012, he was well over 200 innings both years.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's a time where
was 3.7, you know, FIP base war, which is defense independent pitching stats. And his RA9 war was also, let's see, RA9 war was 1.6 because his ERA was, you know, he gave up a lot of unearned runs. If you give up a lot of unearned runs, the RA9 war hurts you.
Yeah.
He gave up 8 unearned runs last year. So, you know, they're a better team. That's it. I mean, that's the bottom line. They're a better team than they were before the trade. They didn't take anything off their major league club to do it. Did they give up some future potential? Yes, they did. But, you know, this is the Padres are a team that invested a lot of money. Then they sold off a lot of guys. I had one person on Twitter say, yeah, well, you know, they lost Soto and, you know, they lost Snell and they lost Hader. So this doesn't make up for that. And that's a somewhat valid argument. But the bottom line is, you know, when you add up all the moves that they did make and the projections for their players, they're projected more or less the same as the Diamondbacks, all within a very close statistical margin of error. They're pretty much the same team on paper when it comes to wins and losses.
Yeah, and plus, you never know what's going on in their heads. Maybe they could be upset at how last year got away from them. Kind of thing, they may be more determined to prove that 23 was the fluke, not 22 as well. So,
yeah,
it remains to be seen on that front. Like, just like I'm pretty sure Dodgers are itching to play the D-backs right now.
Yeah, I'm glad they don't play them till a little bit later on, get their feet wet. I'd kind of hate to see the D-backs have to come right out against the Dodgers in the first 10 days of the season. I think they'll do better if they get a little time in between.
Yeah, as far as last year, D-backs had the element of surprise on them.
Right.
I think. All right, so let's talk about the backup shortstop position. So obviously it's a weird race. Like I said, the backup shortstop comes down to an established veteran in Elvis Andrus, as well as two guys that are kind of playing out of position in Jace Peterson and Emmanuel Rivera. And Rivera and Peterson have been getting some recent starts at shortstop. So what have you seen out of those two so far?
Not a lot, because there's been so few chances. You know, I've seen Manny start a game at short or two. I've seen Jace start a game or two at short. I saw Andrus start one game at short and one game at third. You know, you're talking just a handful of chances. It's very difficult to make any kind of judgment on that. I think something Torrey said today was pretty interesting, though. Because he was asked, you know, can Emmanuel Rivera back up at first base? And he's like, yes, he can. But we're really evaluating him on his ability to play shortstop right now. That's what they're focused on. So I think for Rivera to make the roster, he needs to prove that he can handle 20, 30 games at shortstop. You know, Jace Peterson, I mean, he came up as a shortstop and he hardly played any in the major leagues, mostly second base, some third base. But Torrey said, you know, he moves like an infielder. He likes his movements. He said that with Manny, they're trying to shorten up some of his movements. I think the way he moves still moves like a third baseman playing shortstop. And you probably need a little bit of different kind of movement and footwork. And so he's still that's a work in progress for him. But, you know, Rivera too is a solid infielder. I mean, you know, he's at least an average, maybe slightly above average defensive third baseman. He can handle himself on the other side over at first. You know, giving either of them 30 starts at shortstop is not probably a great idea. You know, it'd be better if either Perdomo hits enough and is healthy enough to start over 140, 145 games. You know, if he's that good, that he could play that much. Of course, Perdomo's hurt right now. He's got some kind of lower body injury from an awkward slide. And then Andres, you know, I mean, he's been an above average shortstop according to StatCast metrics, but below average according to defensive runs saved. You can average a two and say, well, he's about average at this point in his career. I saw him take, you know, a couple of chances at shortstop, and there was one routine play that he made an error. So, you know, but how can I judge anything from that? I'm not going to take a veteran shortstop like him and say, well, he can't play short anymore because I saw him muff one ball in the second spring training game he played. That's not a good evaluation or a fair evaluation either. So I think they have their hands full. I think they have and Torrey said as much. I mean, you know, it's a dilemma for them to figure it out. You know, Peterson and Rivera are out of options, right?
They all can't be sent to the minor leagues.
Yeah, all three of them, right. So, you know, none of them can be sent down. Andres signed a minor league deal. So,
yeah,
he could. But, you know, in the case of Peterson and Rivera, they'd both be exposed to waivers. And, you know, Peterson would clear waivers and become a free agent. And it's just a matter if he wants to stay in the organization or if he gets a chance to latch on elsewhere. The reason he'd clear waivers is because he's owed $3 million by the D-backs. The A's are already paying for two. So if the D-backs put him through waivers and he cleared, you know, then the D-backs are still on the hook for that $3 million. No team's going to pick him up and pay that amount. And Rivera, I mean, you know, he's still pre-arb and has years of control left. So he's not going to clear. No way. So, you know, I think they're probably loath to give up either player. Couple other moving parts related to all of this. Randall Grichuk has still not played in the game, and he's not going to this weekend, and he's not running yet. And while Torrey has steadfastly maintained that he still believes that Grichuk can be ready for opening day, color me extremely skeptical. Because the way they do it is, like, if he plays in his first game, then they'll give him a day off the next day. And then maybe he plays another game the next day. Well, you know, it's pretty easy to look at the schedule and do some math and say, how's he going to get more than three games in? Maybe four. Because he's not starting this weekend. He's not going to play any game this weekend. He's not running, can't run the bases yet. So, you know, if Grichuk isn't ready and needs more time and needs to spend the first 10 days of the year on the injured list or something like that, it gives them the opportunity to carry both Rivera and Peterson and take a little bit more time evaluating. The other thing is, when somebody asked today whether or not Rivera was an option at shortstop, at first base, as well as third, and whether or not that extra flexibility gives him, you know, an upper hand in all of this, that's kind of where Torrey pivoted and said, well, I'm evaluating him as a shortstop. And then he immediately started talking about Pavin Smith. And in his mind, you know, Pavin Smith is definitely number two on the first base depth chart behind Christian Walker. So if Grichuk's on the IL, it really wouldn't shock me to see them go, you know, backup catcher, Pavin Smith, Peterson and Rivera both. Now, you know, Andres is going to get more chances to play. You know, we'll see how he does. I'm guessing he's going to start tomorrow in Maryvale, but I don't know. And, you know, he's got a hard fight. Originally, when he was signed, I think the conventional wisdom was, well, they signed Andres to play. You know, and they're going to want him to be the backup shortstop and utility infielder. But based on the last few days, I'm not 100% sure that's the case. I think it's still wide open in their decision making.
Yeah, and also complicating the thing with Andres is if he doesn't make the roster, I think he's probably going to be looking elsewhere because there's no innings at shortstop or second base for him in Reno because Lawler and Blaze are going to be taking the majority of the innings at those two positions.
Great point. Cheers to our prospects.
Yeah, especially when one of them comes out of nowhere and hits the crud out of the ball all spring.
Yeah, well, as our friend Jim McLennan at the AZ Snake Pit so wisely pointed out, you know, maybe his 4 bazillion BABIP isn't sustainable, but his quality of contact's been pretty good all spring.
I think he got, did he get another hit? Blaze get another hit today?
You know, I don't know if he came in the game late. Did he come in the game late today?
I'd have to figure out who was at second.
Today.
It might have been yesterday, actually.
Yeah. He's got a 483 BABIP. So suffice to say, a 400 batting average might not be sustainable. But, you know, look, if Blaze Alexander can hit 250 in the majors, that's a massive win.
Yep.
You know, because he's got some pop, and if he can hit 250 and make enough contact to hit 250, he'll wrap, knock some extra base hits, he'll run well, and he'll play good defense. You know,
I mean, Blaze had one at bat today and narrowly missed a home run.
Okay, I didn't see it. I might have been heading down to the clubhouse or something.
Yeah, it was the eighth inning. It was either the seventh or eighth inning. Statcast gave him a barrel.
For our viewers, when I'm at a spring training game, what usually happens is the team communications PR department will advise us when the starting pitcher is available for interview. And that's usually been mid-game, you know, around the fifth inning, give or take. So we'll be sitting there in the press box watching the game, and then all of a sudden we get an announcement. Tommy Henry will be available at 2:30. So, you know, then that today that announcement came at 2:20. So essentially we just put down our pens and got up and walked down to the clubhouse. And then once you get all the way down to the clubhouse, which is way past, you know, the left field, if there's anybody else around to talk to, then we'll take that opportunity. They have some TV screens in the clubhouse, and we might watch a little of the game, but you miss a lot. You know, so we're hanging out for an inning or two, and then we walk back up to the press box, and then maybe a little while before the game ends, we head back down because all the starting position players that were in the game, now they've come out in the sixth and seventh inning, and they start walking down to the clubhouse. So we want to go and try to catch, you know, one or two of them if we want to talk to them after the game. So I might miss those last couple innings too sometimes. So spring training games are like that. I get my steps in. I get at least 5,000 to 6,000 steps in every time I go to a spring training game.
Yeah, it's about five minutes from when you're walking at when you're basically power walking from the press box to the offices in left field. Basically, that's how long it is.
Yeah.
And obviously, I think you got Jarvis right around the end of the game. Today.
Right.
As well.
Yeah. So after the game was over, you know, we saw Bryce just before the game ended. But we barely got to talk to him for about a minute and a half, 2 minutes. And then because he had to go shower and everything. And then after a shower, he came out and we spoke to him for 2 minutes. And then we had to run over and grab Tori for his post game. So it worked out. It was great talking to Bryce, and had been a while since I really spoke with him, and you know, that allowed us to kind of dial in with him and talk about his excellent outing today.
So yeah, go on the topic of Jarvis. We're gonna now talk about the fifth starter. Has Ryan Nelson taken the lead in the fifth starter race? And of course, that's all obviously speculation on our end, because Nelson, obviously, if you look at the metrics, has outperformed Henry, but that's based off the, what you say, surface stats. It might not necessarily be evaluating that kind of thing.
I think based on Tory's tone today, my gut tells me, and again, this is speculation, but, you know, we talk to the man every day, and we kind of have a sense for how he's thinking and feeling about things. Doesn't mean I'm right. It's easy to get those things wrong. But he sounded pretty frustrated and upset and disappointed today in everything. That included Tommy. And he actually just came out and said, you know, the guys, seemed to be going through the motions today. And I sure looked at the at-bats were terrible. The defense was terrible. The pitching, with the exception of Jarvis, was not good. Ginkel was good too. But, I mean, you know, Tommy had a pretty poor day. I think that he has fallen behind. If you think about the things that, you know, the execution of the pitches, the location, all of that stuff was just not there. And Torrey talked a little bit about those things, and it kind of echoed what he was talking about earlier, which I wrote about, of what they look at, what are they evaluating, right? So the first thing is, yeah, okay, they look at strength of competition, who are they facing in the lineup, and, you know, what point in the game are they pitching? Because they have to be careful. If a guy comes in and he's just facing, you know, all the minor league subs and striking everybody out, it's not as meaningful as the guy that's pitching the first three innings against the other team's best lineup. So there's that. And Tommy actually has had the higher strength of competition rating. But, you know, beyond that, they look at, you know, what's the shape of the stuff, you know, what's the quality of it, what's the quality of the contact against, and, you know, just how they're competing. And he couldn't have been happy with what he's seen the last couple of outings. I mean, he missed one Tommy's outing out in Surprise last time, right? Because I think Jeff Banister went out there. But this is three pretty bad outings in a row for Tommy. It's got to have hurt his chances to be the fifth starter as of right now.
See, I'm going to pull up the strength of competition here.
Yeah, now this chart was done before today. You didn't update this, right?
No, this wasn't updated.
Right.
So this is entering the game.
Right. The chart that you look at was entering the game, and it got all of Henry's numbers got worse.
And then, of course, I expect Nelson's opponent quality to go up after his next, as he makes more starts as well. Because I don't know. I'm not 100% sure when his next start is. My gut feeling says it'll be at home against the Angels on the 17th, because Nelson starts the last 2 years have been mostly at Salt River Fields in spring training. So they're clearly looking for something.
So a little idiosyncrasy that is pretty easy to kind of figure out. If you look at the lineups every day, when teams are on the road, they send the bare minimum of starters they can get away with. And they essentially send weaker lineups, and their biggest stars usually don't travel. Sometimes they do. But essentially, in spring training road games, it's a much weaker lineup than in home games. So with Nelson pitching most of his games at Salt River, he's facing the other team's road lineup, which is the weaker lineup. So that's why his rating is lower. I mean, he's starting every time out, just like Henry is, but the other teams are just sending weaker lineups to Salt River Fields. So that's why there's that gap in that rating.
And then also, I think the Royals sent most of their starters today to face Henry.
Yeah, they didn't send Pasquale.
That was the only guy I didn't send.
Right. And it's the same lineup that saw him crushed him last 5 days ago, too.
They did. They actually did worse to him 5 days ago. I know Henry got Nick. They didn't necessarily crush him, but certainly location mistakes. And I think the two hardest hit balls against Henry were out of the strike zone, actually.
Yeah. One of the things Torrey talked about, too, is like, hey, you know, when the defense makes a mistake, it's up to the pitcher to pick up the defense. When the pitcher's struggling, it's up to the defense to pick up the pitcher. And, you know, there was no mutual picking up of anything today, including baseball. Nobody, you know, the defense was poor, and Tommy was definitely a victim of bad defense today, you know, to start the game. I mean, he had two outs, and then Gurriel lost a ball in the sun.
That was after he left the game, the Gurriel one. Castro got hit, dinged with the run, I believe.
Okay, I made a mistake. What was the error that happened?
Barnhart? Barnhart misfiring on a swing bunt.
Thank you very much. Sorry about that. Yeah, so there was a swinging bunt. Barnhart came out from behind the plate. He actually, as the play was unfolding, I said, oh, that looks like, I'm thinking, you know, that's a veteran move because he didn't rush it. He took his time, set his feet, still had plenty of time to get the ball down to first base, and then he just fired up the line and almost hit the runner who was still 6 feet away from the bag. You know, he had him easily. And, you know, I mean, to the point where, like, Walker just kind of watched the ball sail by. And you know, he threw it up third baseline. So I was a little shocked by that play. Guy ends up on second base, and then, you know, Tommy wasn't able to get the outs. Gave up two runs. But, you know, overall, I mean, his line today, for those who didn't look it up, 2 2/3 innings, 6 hits, 5 runs all earned. Why are those runs earned?
Because they gave Prado an infield single.
Ah, okay. And then he just got to second based on that. Gotcha. And then 2 walks and 1 strikeout. I mean, it was not good. He also had a hit by pitch. He hit.
The first hit by pitch was pretty bad. He had a 2-strike count. He executed, he overcooked a back foot slider just a little bit. And then the next batter, he hung, I think he grooved the slider down the middle and Melendez hit it off the wall.
Yeah. So honestly, Tommy sounded pretty dejected too after the game. I think he was like, you know, I don't know what's wrong. He's searching for answers, you know, and he was not a, I mean, he knew that he damaged his chances today. That just, it was kind of a bit of a pall over it. And I just want to say, by the way, Tommy Henry is probably, like, of all the people in that clubhouse, he's probably the nicest, sweetest person you could meet in that entire clubhouse. He's a great guy. You know, if you ever want to root for somebody based on what kind of person they are, he's really, he's very friendly. He's humble. He's gracious. You know, he, as I overheard one of his teammates saying to him one day, Tommy, you don't have a mean bone in your body. And that's a perfect description of the Tommy Henry I know. So it hurts to see a guy that you like and you genuinely admire struggle. And he seemed to be hurting a little bit today. I mean, it's a major league pitcher. He's confident that, you know, he'll find his confidence and try to get back to doing what he's capable of doing, which is throwing strikes and inducing soft contact. But, you know, the issue of whether the stuff is going to play and just how fine he has to be with his command and execution to be successful. I mean, he's got to really dial that in. He's got to be really locked on his mechanics and execution of pitches in order to be successful. That's the reality. Which brings us to Ryan Nelson. I'll let you talk about him.
Yeah, so obviously, like I said, we talked about the opponent quality. Nelson has been pitching all of his games at Salt River. And I think before his last start, so March 11th, I don't remember the lineup was for that game, but I think he played most of Oakland's starters in that game, although he did fairly well against that lineup. I think Oakland didn't have Rooker in their lineup. I think that was the main star that was out.
So the Athletics that day came out with Ester Ruiz, Geloff, the one that hurt Ryan.
Blade. Yeah, that was a location mistake.
Yeah, Blade, Andahar, Soderstrom, Toro, a shortstop whose name I can't pronounce, Hernández.
Hernández, I think Hernández.
And then Park in right field and Schumann in second. So, you know, it was Geloff took him deep in the third inning.
Yeah, Gel smoked 3 balls that day, if I remember correctly.
Yes, he did. 3 for 3. But, you know, I mean, overall, it was a good outing. He went 3 2/3. It wasn't his best outing, but, you know, he went 3 2/3, 4 hits, a run on the solo homer, 1 walk, 2 Ks. You know, it wasn't his most impressive spring outing, but it was solid enough.
Yeah. Also got whiffs on his got whiffs on his slider that day after not getting any whiffs on his slider the previous 2 games.
Yeah. He was most happy with his changeup that day.
Yeah. Yeah. Changeup was very good.
You know, I mean, look, Ryne Nelson with a mid-90s fastball and secondary stuff that's working is going to be a good pitcher. You know, the problem with him has always been that, you know, he didn't have good feel and command of his secondary stuff, and guys just sat around waiting for his fastball, which, you know, he, as you pointed out, he tends to lose a tick or two, you know, by the fourth inning or fifth, you know, yeah. So that's an issue. You have a particular opinion about Nelson?
I still think, like I said, if Nelson doesn't have three usable pitches, it's a case where I think they should just have him just, as Bryce Jarvis would say, just eat for two, three innings at a time and put him in a situation where you maybe bridge the back end of the bullpen and the starting pitcher on a short start.
Right. The biggest concern I have with long-term use of a guy like that, where you're trying to use him as a long reliever, is that their workload is so sporadic. It's unplanned. You know, with a short reliever, you can plan when you're going to use him. He's available. He's not available. You know, every other day, you can use him back-to-back days, and then you got to give a day off, whatever. You know, but when you're talking about a long reliever where you're trying to get 5-6 outs or more out of the guy, you may need him on Monday night, and then you don't need him again until Sunday. You know, that's,
yeah,
that happens a lot, right? And so it's really difficult to develop a guy and get him to where you need him to be. I think personally that Nelson would be a lights out short reliever, but, you know, he may also be on the cusp of refining his secondary stuff to the point where he's going to be more than just a fungible starter. He could be a decent back end rotation guy.
Or even more, I would say. If he's got the fastball, slider, and the changeup, he's probably a mid rotation starter, in my opinion.
Yeah, I don't want to reach too high there. I mean,
yeah.
So, you know what, 26 years old now?
Yeah, there's not.
We're getting really close to bumping up against, like, pardon my French, but, you know, pooper get off the pot.
Yep.
I mean, like, he's got to show that he can do this and be a starter over the next couple months, or it's time to go, all right, we know this guy could probably be a good short reliever. The only question there, and I've, you know, never seen it, right, is have they ever had him throw bullpens on back-to-back days, and what does that look like? You know, not every guy recovers quickly enough, even if they're only going 25 pitches or whatever. So, you know, if they want to convert a guy to a short reliever, they have to see what that looks like to make that decision, right? Because you can't have a short reliever that you can't use on back-to-back days.
Yeah, it's not as easy a conversion, I would say, with Nelson as they already know with Jarvis, and maybe they've already tried this with Ciccone. I don't have no idea.
Yeah. I think with Jarvis, did they actually use him did they use him any back-to-back days in relief last year? I don't think so.
No, I think fewest amount of rest was like one day between games.
So,
but even then, that's
the bottom line is, you know, I think Nelson has taken over. Torrey, by the way, was being funny yesterday. I tried to kind of pigeonhole him with a question, and I'm not smart enough, and he's too smart to get pigeonholed. But, you know, I used the phrase pole position. You know, and I said, you know, is there any shifting in the pole position? And he kind of looked at me and, you know, fidgeted a little bit. And then he said, yeah, they're all in the pole position.
Yeah. And the
words, that's not how any of this works.
Everyone that's being stretched out is a candidate for the fifth starter.
Yeah. Yeah. Which brings you to Mr. Jarvis.
Yeah. So I found it interesting what he said to you and Jesse after the game about throwing a cutter, which, of course, if you go through the StatCast page, you're not going to see an identified cutter, but there's clearly nine pitches in there, and I might I'll pull that up. I have it up here. There's nine pitches that clearly qualify that would certainly look like a cutter if you knew what to look for.
What's
we're gonna
change on those pitches?
What's the
On the pitch, the nine that you're identifying, what's the velocity range?
Okay, so 87.4. So 87.4. It's going to be 87.4 to 90.2 is, I think, the numbers. I'm going to pull it up here. Oh, it's already been identified as a cutter.
Oh, did they fix that? Okay.
I guess the people at Baseball Savant read our stuff after all. Well, or maybe they realized something was off.
Well, that makes sense. I mean, because he said the cutter he was throwing about 88, and I'm seeing 89 and 90. So it was actually, he was saying like 88, 89 on the cutter.
Yeah, I'm surprised so there's three pitches here that don't make sense as a slider because the movement profile is a little bit off. There's a lot less horizontal movement on those sliders than the others, but maybe that's just a misfired pitch. One of those that backs up.
So I'm going to the player breakdown. I want to see if they put it, they changed it to cutter there. They did. Okay, so this says he only threw six cutters and averaged 87.4 on the player breakdown portion. But I mean, he got swing and miss with his slider, his four seam, his changeup, his cutter. I mean, he had nine swing and miss today, and you know, multiple swing and miss with all four of those pitches. So pretty impressive.
Yeah, and if the cutter plays at the major league level, I mean, heck, that's enough stuff for Jarvis to start, too. One of those things. And I feel like if he has the stuff to start, he'll stick. I feel like the rest of the package is pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, you know, sure, he averaged 95 on his fastball today. You know, topped out 96.7. I think usually what happens with this slider-cutter thing is I think eventually they end up picking one or the other to be their primary, don't they? Most of these guys. I mean, you know, he's already throwing a changeup in there too. So it's a hard changeup, by the way. His changeup's 86.2. That's not quite cranky hard, but it's a pretty hard change. Yeah. Well, anyway,
there's a lot.
Just had, you know, his best outing in spring. He threw 57 pitches. Certainly put himself back on the map, if not as a potential. You know, even if they're not truly considering him as the fifth starter, he certainly could be,
sixth, seventh.
He could be the long man.
Yeah, I think Torrey said they were considering eight pitchers for their starting pitcher depth chart.
Yeah.
The other day when Humberto Castellanos was mentioned in a question.
Yeah. I think he actually said eight or nine.
He said eight first, and he said eight or nine.
Right. So, you know, I mean, obviously Jarvis is a guy that they need to be careful of and not do what make the same mistake they've done before. Last year, at the end of the year, they moved him to the bullpen. They kept him in the bullpen. They didn't try to stretch him out. They let him do a couple of an extra inning here or there in relief. But he was used once he was sent to the bullpen last year in Reno. And then when he was called up to the majors, he stayed in the bullpen. And then they waited until this year to stretch him back out as a starter. For those that might have missed something that we wrote about, Torrey was very clear that they're really trying to avoid making past mistakes, which was something that they did with Randall Delgado, John Duplantier, and then, of course, most recently, Dre Jameson. They took a starting pitcher, converted him to relief, and then tried to stretch him back out again as a starter. In Duplantier's case, they bounced around like a ping pong ball. They did that several times. It resulted in injury all three times. And Torrey was very matter of fact and bluntly they feel that, you know, they may have, that may have been the root cause of Dre Jameson getting injured. And of course, Jameson had Tommy John surgery and is missing the entire year. So Mike Hazen talked about this once or twice during the offseason about if they convert a guy into a reliever. Now, I'm not talking leave a guy up to do long relief 1 week because they're shorthanded where they know they might need two or three innings. I'm talking about converting a guy to a reliever, you know, where you just have him go out there and pitch one inning at a time. They're not going to do that. And then within the same season, try to stretch the guy out. If they make that conversion, it's a one-way street.
So, it's one-way street for that season.
Correct. So, you know, if Jarvis makes the opening day roster as the long man, I wrote about earlier today, I think whoever that might be, whoever is the long man, which I think they will need one the first week of the season, I don't expect him to stay on the roster in that role long term. I think that they can be used once or twice in that role. And then once the rotation makes a couple of turns and everybody's truly built out, because Zach Gallen and Merrill Kelly aren't going to be ready to go more than five or six innings to their first start, you know, most likely. They're mapped out to be able to go six innings, but it's going to have to be a very clean, efficient six innings. You know, if they have any long innings, 25 pitch innings or whatever, they're going to be in a situation where they can only go five, their first outing for sure. So, you know, very likely the team is going to need a long reliever at least through the first seven games in 7 days to start the season. And then maybe what they'll end up doing is taking a guy that they kept on the roster to be a long man during that first week and then let him pitch two or three innings where he's going to be needed in one game and then send him out back down to Reno to start.
Yeah, and then you would call up a shorter reliever that did initially make team, like, for example, like Corbin Martin or Luis Frias. Correct. To take that bullpen spot.
Correct.
All right. So closing it out, the Diamondbacks will be playing the Rockies prospects Saturday, 4 p.m. Arizona time. The top prospects on the D-backs will be taking on the top prospect of the Rockies. And based on what we've seen so far, based on the Pittsburgh-Baltimore game, it looks like teams are at their discretion of who they'll use pitching-wise and how long they'll go. Like, for example, Pittsburgh used six pitchers to cover seven innings, whereas the Orioles use two pitchers to cover six innings because Pittsburgh was the home team and they won. And it was kind of also a mixed approach. I think when the other game, the Rangers versus Reds, I think the Reds used three pitchers to cover seven innings and the Rangers used six as well. So it's going to come down to the discretion of how the teams do it. But based on the recent roster moves, Blake Walston and Christian Meaner were pulled from the roster, replaced by one-inning relievers Will Mabry and Justin Martinez. It feels like the D-backs are probably going to throw five to six pitchers in those seven innings.
Right. So, you know, the spring breakout for those, I mean, you should probably maybe explain a little further what this
is. Yeah, like I said, it's a seven-inning game. We're probably going to see you're going to see the starters and let's see what. Okay, so obviously there's going to be starters and relievers. The Diamondbacks have two catchers, 14 non-catchers position players. They have seven infielders and seven outfielders each. So it'll be interesting to see how they get that together. Although Vukovic can play third base in a pinch if they had to. Although what we're likely going to see is a shift where one group plays four innings, the other one plays the final three.
Yeah. I think we should also mention that we're waiting on the embed code, but there's a very good chance that you'll be able to watch the breakout game streamed on our website on Inside the Diamondback. So, you know, definitely stay tuned for that and look for an article from us coming out explaining where and how you can watch this game.
Yeah, it's just like scroll up. In that case, I think the article is going to be headlined "Watch" in capital letters. So that, if you wanted a clue on what to look for.
For some reason, by the way, can I just make a tangent here. You sure. mentioned Vukovic and third base made me think of Davison De Los Santos. So I had to go and look up how he's doing over in Cleveland. 28 plate appearances. He's hitting 250, but he hasn't taken a walk. So his OBP is 250. He's got one homer and three RBIs. He's got a 357 slug and 268 wOBA. I mean, either they're going to work out a trade or they're going to send him back. Because the Guardians, sorry. The Guardians can't put a guy like that on their everyday roster. I mean,
My lasting memory of De Los Santos this spring is watching him chase after a Tucker Barnhart double that was hit about 4 feet to his left. Of course, Barnhart hit the crud out of the ball, but it was one of those moments like, oh, so that's how it's working out.
Yeah, for those that aren't quite sure what we're talking about, Davison De Los Santos is a minor league prospect in the D-back system. He was taken in the Rule 5 draft, which allowed the Guardians to take him, but they need to keep him on the major league roster for the entire season. If they don't do that, they have to send him back to the Diamondbacks, unless the two teams work out a deal or a trade, which sometimes happens. So I remember when Mike Hazen talked about this at the winter meetings, and he said, you know, hey, most of the time, the Rule 5 guys that are picked up don't stick for the whole year. And that on their new team's major league roster. And that appears to be the case here, which was quite expected with De Los Santos for anyone that actually knew a lot about him and watched him play, like Michael and myself. So I think there's a pretty good chance he'll end up back in the D-back system.
One thing I'm also interested in is figuring out which corner infield spot Ivan Melendez plays. I'll have to take a look at the roster since the position players obviously haven't been changed, but the team definitely has a bit of a logjam of what I'd like to say a third baseman that probably can't stick at third base.
So
right, here we go.
Playing third base.
All right, so I assume the starting infield is going to have Jordan Lawler at shortstop. Right. Ivan Melendez probably. That's weird. I think Ivan's going to play first because they have Groover and they also have Santana in that infield. Okay. And I assume Tommy Joy is the backup shortstop. Jansen Lewis as one of the second basemen.
Troy hasn't played
yet,
has he?
Wait, who hasn't?
Troy. I think he's played like one game there or something.
I think he's had two at-bats in spring training. He struck out on both of them. Third base. I think his first at-bat, he pinch hit for the DH, and I'll have to double-check the game against Cincinnati, but I don't think he took the field in that game either. Actually, now that I think about it, I think Vukovic is going to DH. Or play outfield. Never mind. I forgot about the DH.
Christian Robinson. Maybe he'll put on a show.
Yeah. Yeah, my memory of Christian Robinson in spring is he closed the ball so quickly, almost overran it against San Francisco.
He showed off the tools that he has in spring training.
Yep.
Showed off his flaw too, swing and miss, but man, he had one homer that got out in a hurry and, you know, made some pretty decent plays in the outfield and looked like an athletic outfielder, runs the bases well. It would be, behoove all of us to, keep an open mind about his ability to make it all the way back.
Yeah. There was one at bat. I remember it almost feels like a microcosm of his career where he was facing JB Bukauskas against the Brewers. So he falls behind quickly in the count 0-2. Then he lays off a couple close pitches, works the count full before striking out. And it kind of just, that kind of hit me after that. It's kind of just how it has been so far for him.
This is true. All right, Michael. Well, that was a good night.
Yep.
Enjoyed
it. Thanks. All right. So thanks everyone for watching. Like I said, and be on the lookout for on Inside the Diamondbacks, which you can find at si.com/MLB/Diamondbacks. And we'll put that right here for everyone to see. As I said, Jack's publisher, I write for Inside the Diamondbacks. Said the, as Jack mentioned before, the stream for the spring breakout game, if you can't watch it on MLB Network, is going to be on our page. And like I said, opening day is now, what, 2 weeks from today?
The 28th, exactly, 14 days.
So we'll find out who's the backup shortstop, who's the number five starter. And should be an interesting season coming up ahead. Do you agree?
Yeah, there's a lot of fascinating storylines. You know, can the Diamondbacks get back to the playoffs? And, you know, where are they going to end up? Does Corbin Carroll still develop and get even better than he was last year, or is he maintained? You know, what's going to happen with some of the newer pitchers, like Eduardo Rodriguez that's come in? Can Paul Sewald continue to shut down games for the most part, like he did prior to the World Series? A lot of big question marks there and a lot of excitement. Yeah, I think the team's going to be pretty good, but they're going to have to step it up a little bit. They're having a rough spring right now. So hopefully they can turn the page quickly once the season starts.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for watching.